This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar. It's 8:03, and you're listening to KBOO Portland. This is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving, and today, which direction is the housing justice movement heading? And how are you going to get involved? Our guest for the hour is Ajamu Umi, talking about this offshoot of Occupy, I would describe it that way, and looking at what its members have been doing for the past year and a half. Ajamu, thanks for being here.
Thank you, Lisa.
We have enjoyed having you call in and participate in this show a few times over the past year. Mm-hmm. And every time you do that, in subsequent weeks, people call in and say, that one guy, he was talking about da-da-da-da-da. So it's great to have you in studio, too.
That sounds good to me.
So the housing justice movement has really, I want to say, had some fascinating breakthroughs just in the past few months. It's like an overnight success after a year and a half, 2 years of work, basically. So can you talk a little bit about the recent sit-in at the Sheriff's Department office, Multnomah County Sheriff's? The county officials came out and made a couple pronouncements. I mean, they weren't complete victories, but it was progress, I think. Talk a little bit about where this housing justice movement in Portland is at right now.
Right. And that's something that I hope people can really understand, because there is a lot of confusion about what's going on with housing justice. The struggle is being waged on several different fronts. And the strategy has been to attack the beast, if you will, at all levels. So, yeah, you know, there's been the sit-in at the sheriff's office. There have been other things that have been happening. But the real focus behind what we're trying to do is take this fight in a direction where we can begin to raise people's consciousness around the question of housing being a human right, and really asking people to ponder the question, why do people have to pay someone to live somewhere? Where did that model come from? You know, we're programmed so consistently that most people hearing that, you've probably never considered living somewhere or living in a society where you don't have to pay someone and someone doesn't profit off of you living somewhere, because that's the only model you've ever known. It's the only model you've ever been told about. And as a result, most people think that's the only model that's ever existed. And that is not true. And what we're arguing and what we're presenting is, and what we're suggesting is, that you consider that there are better models where people can have adequate shelter, and that can feed into them having a place where they can get themselves centered so that they can make a really positive contribution to society. And that this model where people have to pay someone to live somewhere is based on this profit model that doesn't benefit the majority of people that live in this society, and really only benefits a small, select few people who really, if you dig into the history, got the land through illegal means in the first place.
Actually, that last statement, we can't even argue with that, actually, because we know the history.
Right.
So talk a little bit about, okay, so that's the philosophical underpinnings. Mm-hmm. And when you said that, it reminded me of Right to Dream 2,
right?
The folks who were downtown,
right,
who actually have a camp on private property where they have the permission of the guy to live there, but still the city is forcing them to pay some kind of tax, which theoretically, I mean, I don't even understand where that comes from at all.
Right.
But it goes to that thought that everybody has to give somebody money just to exist. Basically.
Right. And, you know, Right to Dream, they're pursuing the question in their own way. I mean, they've got the Housing Bill of Rights that they're pushing for. And that's, you know, one of the other ways in which this question is being the contradiction is being forced. What we're doing is, we have a number of people who we've worked with over the year that we've reached a point where we feel that it's time for us to pressure these banks to release their hold on these people's houses. One person in particular, Miss Annette Steele, the lovely 80-year-old woman here in Northeast Portland, who on July 27th got an eviction order and is still in her house, and we're still supporting her being in her house. And we're in the process right now of taking a demand to this bank that is extorting control over her house and demanding that they just write off the loan, the money they claim she owes them, and release her title to her. And if people don't know, the loan that she got was without question an illegal predatory loan. The foreclosure process that came as a result of that was without question an illegal foreclosure process. This is clearly documented. You can go to the website weareoregon.org and get all the information you want on that if you want to research it yourself. So we're at the point again where we're demanding that. And this Saturday at 10:30, we're meeting in front of Ms. Steele's house to talk to her neighbors and let them know about this campaign that we're engaging in to demand that the bank just release her house. The point of this being that if we can get this to happen, this will be the first one. We want to hopefully create a wave where this happens all over the country, where we're forcing these banks to relinquish and give back to the community a small piece of the money that they stole in the first place, which has been the major reason for this financial meltdown that's been impacting all of us for the last several years.
You know, and we do have a caller, but I want to say that we here on Wednesday Talk Radio, we've talked a bit over the past year about all of the corporations, corporate entities that have actually been paying settlements for fraud. And that's the part that gets me, is the big institutions, are they too big to fail, or are the rich people too big to be gone after?
Right.
This issue just of I don't know whose job it is to make sure that fraud doesn't crush everyday people. And so talk a little. Okay, let's go to the caller.
Mm-hmm.
Is it? I hope it's Joanne. Joanne, so many of these issues, and we never really dig into what's happening with public housing, which is your situation. But what have you got in your mind this morning?
Public. I mean, it's been a long time in any quality sectors, and in so many other things, classism in my life, and it still goes on. But anyway, I don't know if anybody considers this a form of housing justice, indirectly or something. Anyway, I have to do an annual review soon, and one of the new forms I've never seen before says statement of eligibility. This is program integrity. Here's one of the some of the questions: Are you, or this is a new form to me? Are you or any member of your household subject to a lifetime state sex offender registration program? Does anyone in your household currently use any drug illegally? Has anyone in your household been arrested or convicted of a crime in the past 12 months? I'll get off the phone. Bye.
So there went Joanne, but I've got her. Joanne lives in public housing, and we've talked about this a little bit when we're talking about housing justice. In the past year, I've interviewed a lot of people that live in public housing, and every single solitary person lives in fear that they're going to be pushed out and that they don't have a place to go.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these federal laws that impact public housing are amazing. Like, if you have a drug conviction, you can't live in public housing. Even if you're just living with someone else, it's like your entire family is penalized. We talked a little bit when you first came in this morning about how you've got so many things going on that you're looking, Ajamu Umi, at ways of trying to delegate some of these projects. So we've got public housing right there on the list. Can you go down the list of all the things? Because we're talking about the housing justice movement.
Right.
Definitely, Joanne, what you're talking about is part of the housing justice movement, I would say unquestionably.
Yeah.
So, can you just give us a laundry list? You know what, Ajamu? Let's figure out if someone listening today might care to step up and help you with some of these projects that you're trying to delegate. Because I'm willing to guess that some listeners to this show right now probably are people that feel strongly about this, and they're looking for ways to participate. So, and by the way, listeners, are you already working on a community project or dreaming of one you wish someone would organize, or do you have some spare time? Give us a call. Lines are open, 503-231-8187. We see people doing smaller projects on their own, and I think that this is all part of it. And caller, we're going to get to you in a minute. Let's get to the laundry list of all the things that we have going with housing justice in Portland area.
Yeah, and Joanne touched on something that if people don't hear anything I say today, this is the most important thing. And that's, you know, we've got to build a movement, and everybody can play a role. And everything that we're doing, which is focused around doing that, building a movement. What's happening right now is people that are having issues with housing, public housing, tenant issues, foreclosure, the consciousness around that now is I have to get a lawyer. I have to go to court. I have to fight
this.
And everybody's trying to resolve this problem on their own individual basis with their family. Folks, it is not going to work like that. You are not going to be successful. We might have one or two token people who have success doing that, but the overwhelming majority of you are not going to be successful with that individual approach. Just imagine if Rosa Parks had sat down and she was the only one, she just made an individual decision. Where would that have led her? You know, the only reason why she was successful is because she had the NAACP planning behind her. She had the community planning behind her.
She was part of a wider community.
Right, evolved into the Montgomery bus boycott movement. So, you know, we've got to understand that. And I know that may seem overwhelming to people, but the pieces are already there. So what are those pieces? Well, we've got committees organized in every part of this city that are going door to door talking to people about these issues of housing justice that I mentioned. The concept of why do we need to pay someone? Why should we have empty houses? Why should people be evicted from their houses? We're talking to people so that we can raise their consciousness about this, so that because we know that once we create a greater consciousness, a lot of the problems that Joanne is talking about can be properly addressed. The reason why the system can do people like her the way they do is there's no public pressure forcing them, holding them accountable. So that's what we have to create. So we need people to join these committees so that we can help. They can help us do this work. We go out every Friday night and we patrol MAX trains and we're surveying people on the MAX trains about housing justice. We're talking to people and the conversations enable us to, again, get people in understanding. And people are aware of these issues, but they're looking at them from the perspective of, this is what my brother is going through. This is what I'm going through. This is what my mother is going through. And we're trying to get people to see, no, this is what society is going through. And so we've got to solve it as an organized community. So the Friday night patrols are another thing. We've got these houses that we're defending here, people who are fighting back as symbols of the type of work we need to do, like Alicia Jackson's house in Northeast Portland. The city is trying to evict her. The city seems to think that it's better to have a house empty that's owned by a bank so that the banks can control the pricing market, you know, by keeping houses empty and not allowing them to go out on the open market. And we disagree wholeheartedly. We believe that it's better to have someone in the house. The foreclosure is contested. While that's being fought out in the courts, it's better to have the person in the house paying utilities, contributing to the local economy, keeping the house up, contributing to the community, the security of the community. And so we are defending her right to be in her house. And so we have people there at her house 24/7. I just came here from doing an overnight shift there last night. We need more people. It's the same people doing that. So those are three concrete things that we need people to get involved with, that I'm intricately involved in all levels of that. We need people to get involved with this movement, to talk to people and recruit people to do this work. We need people to go out with us and talk to people in the streets. We need people to do home defense shifts. We need people to get involved on whatever level you can and will, so that we can build a movement. Because if we don't do that, that's the only way we're going to be able to win and make housing the human right that it really should be.
And this is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're live in Studio 2 with Ajamu Umi. We're talking about the housing justice movement, this offshoot of the Occupy work. The Occupy people, they went in a couple different directions, and actually there's amazing things happening with those movements of people who came together. And we're asking people right now, listeners, are you already working on a community project that you want to get someone to help out on, or do you have a dream project that you think someone should be doing, or maybe are you ready to get involved with the housing justice movement? The number to give us a call and talk about that is 503-231-8187. And we have Joe on the line. Joe, what are you thinking about?
I'm curious about what does a model look like where you don't have to pay for housing? Is there an example of that?
All right. Well, I'm just going to share that I used to live in Amsterdam, and my family and I lived in a squat. And it was a building that actually was owned by the city of Amsterdam, and it wasn't used. And there was actually, at that time, there was a process, a legal process, to declare a squat in Amsterdam. And it was pretty fascinating. And now those laws have changed because the housing markets in the city of Amsterdam changed. And the housing, the people that owned the buildings originally before they lost control of them found legal means in court to get control back. And the interesting thing is, in many, 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 many of these instances, the squatters actually improved the buildings. Those were the key things. Mm-hmm. Those were the times when the former homeowners were able to come back. After, in this one case, friends of mine, they squatted, I know that the term is like duplex. It's like a townhouse. We think in Portland of townhouses of being yucky, ticky-tacky things, but it's actually kind of an old form of housing. So this particular, it was a building that was like 400 years old, and no one had put a key in the lock in 30 years. And these people had gone in there and literally scraped pigeon refuse for like 6 months and cleaned the whole thing out. And in the end, boom, the former owner got it back because they figured out loopholes, and that's what they did. They had to wait until the housing market flipped around. But do you have any other, you have some more ideas?
Yeah, I mean, you know, the key is that we're not saying people don't have to pay anything to live somewhere. We're saying that housing should not be based on profit. There are financial housing co-ops all over the world. Even here in Portland, there are financial co-op housing where people come together and they decide, okay, this is where we're going to live as a collective community, and this is how much it costs to maintain this community, and people contribute what they can based on a formula scale that makes sense based on what their income is, and people do that. And that exists here in Portland. It exists in South America. It exists in Africa and Europe. It exists all over the world. We're saying that is a model that makes a lot more sense than this profit for living model, which is based on people who stole land from indigenous people. The Oregon land donation program, people should look that up, where people came out here and land was just stolen and allocated to people, and then they owned it, quote unquote, and then they started leasing it out and selling it. That's the model that we're opposed to. So yeah, there are all kinds of models. And I spoke in a class at PCC the other day and talked about this. And one of the students said, well, you're talking about a utopian. This is already in existence. It's not utopian, but everybody's been programmed that you've got to pay somebody, some bank, some landlord to live somewhere. And if you're not doing that, then you're talking about some hippie commune type thing. No, we're talking about a model where it makes sense, where people can live somewhere, they can pay what they can afford to pay, they can have decent housing, and they can put them in a position where, imagine if they don't have to worry about where they're going to lay their head at night, then they have the energy, the creativity, the motivation to go out and make a real positive contribution to society, much more positive than what we're seeing in this type of society today.
Joe, you called the question, but I bet you have an opinion.
Power to the people. That's all I got to say.
Right on, Joe.
Right on.
And so the number to call, we're over here at 503-231-8187. This issue is interesting because, again, I go back to this episode of Circle A Radio, one of my favorite programs on any airwaves, where the women in the collective years ago interviewed, they did an entire story about housing and the lack of housing, and they found a group of elderly women in Northeast Portland, I believe it was, who each one had like a room or a space. And they set up their own personal council to bring people in who didn't have a place to live and let them live there in these separate places, just for no rent or anything, just to literally as a group of private citizens that got together and said, we want to make a difference, and that's what we're going to do. And I bet there's a lot of other people like that. And I know that there are people that are privileged to own homes who also literally map out, you know, ways that they can have housemates that don't, I don't know how to say, literally sharing our resources so that none of us go broke. And we look at that in my house too, a system of roommates. I don't know how many times we've had friends that just had an absolute crisis and we were able to provide a space for them. And we feel like that's an important thing to do. But listeners, look, a housing justice movement, 503-231-8187. 8187. Are you already working on a community project? We'd love to hear from you. And Ajamu, I'm working on this story where I work about homeowners associations. Mm-hmm. And you're like, you know, so what? It's like a condo development thing. This just happens to be like a homeowners association in a really poor neighborhood. Mm-hmm. But the real backstory here is all the people that make money from grief in housing. Mm-hmm. Seriously. An entire avenue of law where it's literally lawyers that fight over whether you're going to get kicked out of wherever you live or not. Mm-hmm. And that's true with homeowners associations. It's true in all kinds of different areas. When you look at where the money's really at, these law firms and these lawyers, it's amazing. And with these housing cases, it's like you said, it's like the only thing that when you talk to the elected officials, you approach the city council, your lawmakers in the legislature, your county commissioners, they all say, well, you're just going to have to get a lawyer, and it's not good. Anyway, I just had it.
Yeah, no, and you're absolutely right. I talked to an attorney the day before yesterday that people said, you can talk to this guy. He wants to help. He's a real estate attorney. And this gentleman told me that he does pro bono work for people for an agency. He has liability insurance paid for him by the agency at about $250 a month. And so he told me, if you can pay that for me, then I'll do some work for you. If you can't, I can't take the risk. So, I mean, these are the kind of answers we get. But I wanted to say, in back to the laundry list, there are specific things people can do. I've got an organization for everybody. you know, Occupy Northeast, the Black Working Group, needs members. It meets every first Saturday of the month at Missionary Baptist Church there on 238 Northeast Mason at 1 p.m. 238 Northeast Mason at 1 p.m. the first Saturday of each month. We need people there. If you don't like that, the Blazing Air Organization is another housing justice organization. We do the Friday night patrols every Friday. We meet at 8 p.m. at the MAC station at Lombard and Interstate. 8 p.m. every Friday night at the MAC station at Lombard and Interstate. That's a great way if you want to do grassroots organizing. If you don't like that, then we've got other things for you to do as well. You can contact me at umifam@gmail.com, and we can plug you up, give you something to do in this housing justice movement.
And we do have a caller. The number to call is 503-231-8187. And we have Karen on the phone. Karen, what are you thinking about today?
Well, you know, I'm always glad when this conversation takes place because it's really good to just remind people of what's going on and the reality for a lot of folks. And, you know, there's so many aspects to this, but I think one of the things to keep in mind is that, you know, when we hear stories like this about Annette or Alicia or different people, you know, these are folks that are just like us. I mean, this could happen to anybody. You know, you can pay your mortgage every month and think that you have a line of credit or a loan or whatever that is fine, and you're working with a great company and all that, and then they can turn around on a dime and just decide, well, no, we're not going to refinance. Yeah, we promised you we would, but you know what? We're just not going to do that. And then all of a sudden, everything changes. Your life is upside down. So I think it's really important to remember, no matter, you know, what profile we hear about a particular person, this is a universal problem that's going on. And, you know, here we are facing all these cuts in our community services and all that. And if these people are in their homes, they're paying taxes.
Mm-hmm, right.
And that supports all these services. So,
and so when the house is in foreclosure, does the bank pay the taxes? Some of this stuff, mm-hmm. I really wonder. There's a lot of weeds. Anyway.
No, the bank does not pay the taxes. So I would like to urge people, because there is all this fraud and abuse going on, you know, when we ask, well, what can we do? We can call the Attorney General at 503-378-4400. And put some pressure on them and say, look, we have got to investigate this because it's rampant. So 503-378-4400. call the Attorney General and say, investigate this now.
All right. Thanks for calling, Karen. Thanks for calling.
Thank you.
People, if you are in foreclosure, if you're thinking that you might land in foreclosure, if you're just really interested in this issue, traditionally attorneys general, state attorneys general, actually do specific things they think or they say are going to help people from getting foreclosed, or they're going to offer people some kind of services. I think that I'd love to hear from people who maybe did get help from the Attorney General's office, but you could go to Oregon State Attorney General on the web and look at their pages, their information pages about foreclosure. I know they do have some good advice sometimes, because there's a lot of scammers out there preying on people with foreclosure. And the thing about, if we're talking about foreclosure, now, we've had this issue on the Wednesday Talk Radio several times in the past year, and you're thinking, I'm not a homeowner. I'm never going to face this issue. Untrue. And we've been looking at people that have been thrown out of their homes who are renters, and it has to do with who owns the building that's rented. And it is true. It can impact anyone. And we have a caller, the number to call, 503-231-8187. We have Vicki on the phone. Vicki, what's going on?
Oh, hi. I just wanted to weigh in on this topic because I happen to be going through this particular thing on housing that I think it impacts both in foreclosure, the bottoming out, so-called bottoming out of the housing market here in Portland, that has affected me as a divorcee on into the rental market. So one thing impacts, they are all interdependent is what I'm finding.
Mm-hmm.
So, essentially, I'm without a home because, I decided that I was being unfairly evicted. I couldn't round up support fast enough, and the legal system, I mean, I've just learned a whole lot about being homeless, what it means like to lose your status from one moment to the next, to feel like you're a second-class citizen from one moment to the next. Once you have a place to live, people look at you in the eye, and then after that, it's as if they're afraid that bad luck might rub off on them.
Mm.
And so that's more of the emotional part of, but coming from a social work background and a spiritual background, these are the things that I am noticing in my experience.
And it does impact like a measurable percentage of the population. Vicki, thanks a lot for calling. And this is Wednesday Talk Radio. We're live in Studio 2 with Ajamu Umi. We're talking about the housing justice movement. We're talking about what you can do to get active in your own community, to fight back against actually some very large interests. If you're really interested in speaking truth to stupid, that's rude. Speaking truth to power, this is your vehicle, okay? And so we've already gone over, there's quite a few things going on. You can participate by going the first Saturday of the month to 238 Northeast Mason Street, and that is the Black Working Group?
That's the Black Working Group, yeah.
Okay. Blazing Arrow is the Friday night patrolling on the MAX train at 8 p.m. at Lombard, at Interstate, and talking to people about housing justice. It's like, I don't think you even have a clipboard. I look for clipboards. I run away from clipboards. I'm just clipboard phobic, but... literally talking to everyday people about what's going on. And for more information, we're already saying that you can email Ajamu Umi and all of these different projects at umifam@gmail.com. It's umifam@gmail.com. And, you know, here's another issue, and this is really funky. We're talking about housing justice. Check this out. There's this thing happening in Oregon right now where the foreclosure process is sort of gummed up because of a legal disagreement about MERS, which is the MERS is the mortgage-backed securities system, the electronic system that allowed all these mortgage companies to electronically robotic sign all this paperwork. And so there's a sense that actually I'm not sure if there's a lawsuit or what it is.
There is
a lawsuit. Yeah. And so until this lawsuit is decided, a lot of the mortgages, there's sort of a hold on them, but it's believed that once this thing is resolved, there's going to be a dam burst of foreclosures. People are waiting for it already. Multnomah County announced in February that they are suing MERS for $38 million, which actually, I'm looking at you and saying, I don't think that's very much money. It's a weird thing when it comes to the settlements of these cases. The amounts that everyday people might have access to are tiny, and the amount of money that these companies, institutions made is in the tens of billions of dollars. Anyway.
Yep.
Multnomah County is suing a huge mortgage multinational and 18 co-defendants, including some of the biggest banks in the nation, for $38 million. I'm reading Ben Jacolet's article in the Business Journal, the Portland Business Journal. It's dated February 8th of this year. The property records system that enabled the rapid, complex transactions involving these bundled mortgages was the mortgage electronic registration system. And it's these kinds of things, like this runaway train of MERS, it's called MERS, that it just runs people down. And it's like Vicky was just talking about how everyday people, it's like people have a sense of hopelessness, like I could never fight against mm-hmm. this. And there was an interesting breakthrough that you guys had with Multnomah County, and I would like to talk about that. But let's go to this caller really quick. We have Martha on the phone. Martha, what's going on?
Good morning. Thanks for this awesome program. Across the country, I know Illinois, Ohio, and Georgia for sure, sheriffs have refused to cooperate in serving evictions, and that hasn't happened here. And I know you've been talking with the sheriff, and I understand that the sheriff pretty much says they would be in danger, and apparently from the Oregon Secretary of State. Could you comment on this?
Yeah, what mm-hmm. happened when you met with the sheriff, Sheriff Dan Staton?
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Martha, for calling.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, thank you, Martha. Those meetings continue. All I can really say about that right now is we need more people in this fight. The more people we have in this fight, the more pressure we can place on these so-called public officials. Right now, as long as this thing is perceived as, you know, a few radical activists who are raising this question, then, you just get into this rotating chairs type process with these people. We need enough people involved so that they realize that if they don't get up and do something immediately, that, you know, there's going to be consequences. And if you look at history, when things have happened, that's when they happen, is when people organize and place pressure on elected officials. This concept to me, and I, you know, full disclosure, the process doesn't have much credibility with me, so I'm speaking from that perspective. But this concept people have that, you know, you can go and individually make change through the elected process for something like this is a fantasy. The only way that we're going to be able to make any serious inroads is through mass action. And we've had a lot of victories. You know, we've had some major victories. We've got Darren and Patricia, who are in their house in East Portland. They were evicted by 30 police, sheriff, and Portland police back on October 30th, if people remember. It was all in the news. You know, people were pepper sprayed out there. They were evicted from their house. 2 weeks later, they were moved back in. They're still in their house. So you can't tell me if we don't organize, we can't win. We can win. That's just one example. Alicia Jackson, come May 1st, will be a year in her house since we moved her in back in May 1st of 2012. So that's because there have been people involved in this. We have done this with no support from any elected officials whatsoever. You know, so just imagine with the few people we've had, we've been able to do things like that, what we could do if we got hundreds, thousands of people involved on a day-to-day basis, what we could accomplish.
Mm-hmm. So as you guys have been sitting down with Sheriff Dan Staton, it's like, so I have to come back to that because it fascinates me. When I interview Sheriff Dan Staton, he's just the nicest guy in the world, right? And when I look at what happens with these foreclosures, I cannot believe that these law enforcement guys want to be dragging cancer patients out of their houses in the rain and dropping them on the sidewalk like they have. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, can you just talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, I mean,
so how can people back you up on that? And just what is the sheriff saying?
Well, you know, people have to understand that the government is a complex group of bureaucratic divisions. I mean, so, you know, we're talking to not only just the sheriff, we're talking to the attorney general's office. There's the secretary of state involved. There's the district attorney. There's the Multnomah County court judge on foreclosures. We've been The sit-in that we had has forced a process where we've been talking to all these folks. And, you know, it's kind of one of those things where everybody's pointing at each other. You know, I mean, that's what's happening. Now,
it's the other person's job. It's the other person's job to do something.
The public face of this is the sheriff. So because of that, you know, I would imagine the sheriff.
Because he's an elected official.
Yeah. The sheriff has, you know, some concern about getting the public pressure off of his office. But what people can do is that we've got to maintain a constant presence in all of those people's faces, because, you know, we're still talking to them. So I can't, you know, talk in great detail about that. But I can say that a lot of those entities that I just named are really confident that they're insulated and nobody knows who they are or what their role in this is, and that nobody really can do anything, even if they do know. And what I think we have to do is we have to prove to them that they're wrong, whatever way people can do that. And I think the best way is for people to get involved in these processes we're talking about, because I don't care what people are saying they can't do because of their particular job limitations. If we had 5,000 people demanding that they do it, it would get done. And I know that it would happen that way. So, you know, we just have to get people involved, and whatever problems we're encountering now, making progress with these folks, that will change. But as long as it's just the people that it is right now, you know, they can shuttle meetings around. They can claim that they can't do this because this office prevents them. And then that office says, well, I can't do it because this office prevents it. And then, you know, you get this merry-go-round effect.
Not surprising. That's what a bureaucracy means.
Right.
So this is Wednesday Talk Radio. I'm your host, Lisa Loving. We're live in Studio 2 with Ajamu Umi. We're talking about the housing justice movement being at a critical place. And a number of efforts are really reviving. And you can see we're already talking about this one very specific thing where this issue of trying to make it so that Miss Annette Steele actually has the title handed back to her house. That's a battleground right there. Mm-hmm. That's completely fascinating. And so the phone lines are open, people. Are you working on a community project around housing justice? We would love to hear from you. Or are you involved in a foreclosure? Do you have a housing justice issue that's burning up your shoes right now? We would love to hear from you. 503-231-8187. Don't wait till the end of the hour to call now, okay? Because what happens is the last 3 minutes, 14 people call, and they're awesome, and we have to go, and I hate that. So call now to get in on this conversation. And you know, Ajamu, here's another thing, and I think that this is one thing that keeps people from participating, aside from what Vicky said earlier about when people see that someone's having a hard time with their housing or something, mm-hmm. and other people sort of shun them because they're worried they can catch it. We've all seen that. Poverty does that. It builds on itself somehow. But I've heard people mm-hmm. call up this show and say specifically, you know, people who are in this situation brought it on themselves, and it's their own fault, and they shouldn't have taken out that loan because they should have been more sophisticated. And I have one caller who called sometime in the past who said specifically one of the people that you're doing foreclosure protection on is someone who, quote, used her house like an ATM, unquote. People who have second mortgages and stuff like that. Can you talk a little bit about this thing where literally the blame the victim game mm-hmm. when it comes to this housing crisis that we are seeing so many of these large institutions actually settling with the government because they perpetrated fraud. But can you talk a little bit about this blame the victim mm-hmm. thing when it comes to the housing justice movement?
Yeah, and I don't know, you know, who people are talking about, because I'm very intricately involved in all the cases, but I can
say Alicia Jackson specifically.
Yeah, well, that's I love to talk to that person because I think I mean, I've seen those reports in the media, and you know, the media, the mass corporate media is what it is. But being a recovering banker, you know, I have a pretty good perspective of this, and I think people have to understand how the process unfolds. When someone goes in, if you take someone like Miss Annette Steele or Alicia or whomever, and they go in and they're applying for their loan and they're wanting to get a house, they're going in there thinking, you know, people are not mortgage contract verbiage is written up by corporate attorneys. And it's written so that the average layperson is not going to be able to read it and understand it. So, you know, anyone who, unless you're a trained attorney in real estate law, I challenge anybody to come to me, contact me, and bring your mortgage contract, and we'll go over it. And I guarantee you're not going to understand 60-70% of what's written in the verbiage of that contract. And you signed it. So people that say, well, why did they sign it if they didn't know what they're signing? You're just not being honest. You know, you don't know. I mean, and anybody who's been divorced, people sign contracts and it doesn't end up the way you want it to end up. So, you know, we need to just stop that foolishness right away. What's happening is that people sit down, they're sitting down with loan professionals. These people are not, the people that they're sitting down with, they're not telling them, you know what, I need you to know I'm incented based on how much money I can make off of you. Just so you know that up front before you talk to me or sign anything. That's not what they're being told. These people are presenting themselves to people like they're there to represent their interests when they're really not. They're there to profit off of their interests. And so the people are sitting down and they're listening to what these people are telling them because they're thinking that these people are telling them things that are in their best interest. So when people say things like, well, what payment can you afford? Well, I can afford $1,000 a month. Okay, great. I can get you in a mortgage. I can get you in the house you want for $1,000 a month. People are like, great. I did it. I accomplished my goal. And they're not telling them, but I can do that for 3 years. And then at the end of that 3 year period,
you have to pay $30,000.
Exactly. And they're not, and what makes it illegal is that if they tell them that and they don't tell them the part about the $40,000, they have to get them to sign a disclosure indicating the people understand that's what's happening. And in the case of the people we're working with, the banks are not able to produce these signed for disclosures because they don't exist. And that's where the fraud comes in. And this is the part that people, that's why I'm taking the time to lay this out step by step, because this is the part people don't understand. And when people are talking about, well, they signed something they didn't understand. And you know, you're so far off point. You give me a headache talking like that. You know, this is the kind of thing that's happening. We're seeing this. I'd be happy to show you where this is happening to people. If you really want to know the truth and you want to see it, we can show you where this is the kind of stuff that's happening to people. And that's why people are in this situation. So the fact that people refinance their house, that's irrelevant to how they're being frauded and what's happening to them now. So, you know, if you want to know, you can know. If you want to just talk, then you can talk. But for those who really want to understand, we can show you why what's happening is happening.
UmiFam@gmail.com. And we have a couple of callers. Let's go to the phone lines. We have Cheryl on the phone. Cheryl, what's going on today?
Yeah, it's funny. I've been listening to what you've been talking about. I live in Salem, and I'll get that website from you again. I couldn't write it down fast enough, but I'm in Salem, and I was in mortgages before the deregulation, and I agree with the gentleman saying, even when I was in real estate, I got out of it in 2010. I'm living in public housing, and they remodeled our public housing. It took 3 months, and people had the key to our house. They could come and go, which is totally against all the landlord-tenant laws. You wouldn't believe what we went through, 160 senior and disabled people for 3 months. Putting on my door, I left here because of chemical fumes, and I came back, and my back door was put on and left unlocked for 10, 11 days. I mean, and I called lawyers, and basically none of them wanted to talk to me or anybody in here about this because it is a federal housing facility. So you're really up against something that nobody wants to touch. I'll just throw that out there. Mm-hmm. And so I've been in mortgages, I've been a realtor, I've been to closings, and like this gentleman said, when they went on commission, these mortgage brokers, the whole world changed. And when you go to a closing at the title company, they go through a thing so fast that everything has gone through so fast that they don't care if people understand, and people just want the house, and, you know, it's emotional, and you're sitting back here, and it's just like you're saying, I forget the gentleman's name. You know, when you don't know these things, I talk people out of buying houses. I lost clients because I said, no, you know, don't go there. Because I knew what was happening because I've been on all the different sides of the fence. So I live in Salem, and if there's anybody in Salem or anything I can get involved in down here, I'll go to your website. I'd love to get involved. I have plenty of time and knowledge to be able to understand this stuff.
Awesome. You want to respond? This is Ajamu. You know, Ajamu, meet Cheryl.
Well, yeah, Cheryl. I mean, feel free to contact me again. You can reach me at UmiFam, UmiFam, at gmail.com. Yeah, U as in unicorn, M as in man, I as in Indian, and then F as in family, A as in apple, and then M as in Mauritania at gmail.com. And I'd be happy to talk to you and see what we can hook up. This is the kind of work that we need to do.
All right.
Okay, UMIFAM.
At gmail.com.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Alrighty. All right. Okay. Thanks. Well, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And also, you can learn more about this issue in general at weareoregon.org.
Yes.
I think so. Okay. We have another caller. We have Vicki. Is Vicki back? Is this a different Vicki?
Yeah, this is Vicki. I was just going to leave a question, but what I'm experiencing also is when, sorry, that wonderful name, but I'm terrible with the thing having to do with the interplay of systems.
Mm-hmm.
I've experienced in my eviction, I had the fire department involved because there was a wall fire. I had the city inspector involved because I heard that the sale on this particular floating home had gone out because of black mold, and so somebody reneged and was able to get out of it. Yet, she was able to rent me without telling me about any of the dangers. And then, even when I had the city inspector come out, I'm wondering how interlinked these systems are, and how the word corruption kind of comes up in my mind.
Corruption of the government agencies, is that what you're saying? City bureaus?
Exactly, because once I called the city inspector, I mean, I had sheriffs all over me, and I'm just a 57-year-old woman, but they were, mm-hmm. like, hauling me out of this place. And while I was doubling over coughing, and I wonder, if this land, I know this bridge going into Washington is a big issue. There's lots of money going into Hayden Island and lots of pressure. Sam Adams wanted to get that thing done, an agreement made before he left office. I'm wondering if that floating home over on Hayden Island, the city inspector's office, all of these things aren't tied together.
Thanks a lot for calling, Vicki. Mm-hmm. This is the kind of thing in the story that I'm mm-hmm. working on about homeowners associations mm-hmm. that a lot of the people that are members of the homeowners association wonder also.
Mm-hmm.
Is there someone behind closed doors in like collating all these bureaus together to decide to throw me out of my house? That's what people
right.
kind of want to know.
Well, I mean, I don't think there's anybody that can really question that. I mean, if you look at what's happening, 30, 40 police officers sent to evict people from their houses. These are cases that are being contested in court. These are civil matters. They should play out. If you believe in the court system, not saying I do, but for those of you who argue with me all the time and say you do, if you believe in that, then it would make sense to let it play out in the court system, right? So why are the police, who are supposed to be public servants, according to what people tell me, they shouldn't have anything to do with that. It's not a criminal matter. And the fact that they're lining up, that the city is saying, we're not going to turn Alicia's water on because the bank says no, and it's a contested foreclosure, then there's no question that the city agencies are lining up in bed with these banks. And I don't see how anybody can argue that. I mean, I would love to hear the logical argument. Clearly, the city should have nothing to do with this issue until it's resolved as a civil matter.
All right, and we have another caller. Michael's on the phone. What do you think, Michael?
Well, I think that, first of all, I've dealt in real estate, and on those contracts, it clearly says this is a legally binding contract that is not understood, seek legal counsel. So it does say that on every contract. And as far as people going into default, they send those letters out, I think, 120 days before the sale is due. And they send you packets. And one of the things on the packet, they ask about your financial statement and what happened. And it's based on how you answer that financial statement depends on if they're going to help you or not. As far as taking your house, most of these loans come with redemption period. So you have periods that you can redeem your loan. As far as the sheriff coming out, I mean, that's a long process before it gets to that point. And if people sit back and wait to the last minute and don't try to. They got deed back and lure foreclosure. They got short sales. They got all kind of ways that people can do. And so you can't just blame it on the city. I mean, you can't do that. So I'm just saying it ain't all. I've been there. I've done it. I've dealt short sales. I've done all of that, and I know how that system goes. And if people wait till the last minute and get kicked out of their house, it's their fault.
Michael, you're saying don't blame the city?
No. No, don't blame the city because most of the loans on houses are trust deeds. And they got trustees that handle the sales. And all along the way, there's options. You can deed the property back. You can short sell. You can try to renegotiate your loan and get help.
Right.
I mean, there's all kind of ways you can do before they actually come up and
throw you out. Michael, thank you so much for putting this on the table. I always wish you called at the beginning of the hour because you always have your fingers on the pulse of what I know a lot of people are thinking, whether I agree with you or not. I always appreciate your calling. So thanks a lot. And we're starting to run out of show, but I just want to hear the response because, again, I just feel strongly about this. Go ahead, Ajami, though.
Well, I mean, he's in the industry. So, you know, like people who are in that industry, they have to find a way to justify how it works. Clearly, again, we're talking about people who are going to banks, trusting what they tell them. And you could make the decision that, well, that's their fault if they don't understand. But this happens on every level of society. And we all do that. And so, I'm not in a position to pass judgment. What I prefer to do is sit down with each person, hear their story, and evaluate whether they have been taken advantage of or not. It's not my position to tell an 80-year-old lady who walked every day to Lake Oswego to work that she needs to understand all the options the gentleman talked about. I don't think that that's a humanistic way to look at how to resolve problems. And I think that whoever sat down and talked to Ms. Steele when they gave her loan clearly understood that she probably did not understand all of those options and was probably very excited about the fact she didn't understand it because the type of loan they set her up for was very profitable for the people who engaged it and put it in place. So, you know, I'm a recovering banker. I understand everything he said and more, but that is to me subterfuge to take away from the real issue that we need to create a society where we're working with people, where we're helping people, not justifying why people were taken advantage of because it's profitable for us.
The other thing that I just want to add to that is that, again, Michael, this industry has changed in the past 10 years or so. And when I looked at all the papers about Mrs. Steele's house, her loan had been bundled and resold so many times that when it came down to who actually owned the paperwork, it was like Joe's Midnight Mortgage Company. I'm not making that up. It had been sold and resold. It was like over and over. And when you looked at the names of the companies, even just trying to figure out who held the title was a job. And that's kind of what I'm getting out with the fraud thing. Yeah, always caveat emptor. And yet, Michael, it is in the interest of these banks, these title companies, these attorneys, the real estate people, so many people have a piece of that cake. It is in their interest to try to, I don't know, make it a little more difficult for people to understand what's happening with the debt itself. And every time Ms. Steele turned around, there was more debt piled on. When I look at these issues with these homeowners associations, that the homeowners associations are able, they have unlimited power to put fees and fines, okay, in the state of Oregon, on some of these homeowners. It's like these homeowners, they turn around. I mean, none of this money existed. It was this one institution that said, oh, now you owe this. Oh, we're going to double it. Now you owe that. It's almost like a game to them. It doesn't signify any blood, sweat, tears, or anything on the part of the Homeowners Association or their attorneys. I'm putting that out. I should probably shut up about this. There's another caller. Brian's on the phone. Uh-oh, here comes Brian. Brian on the Oregon coast? Yeah. You must have a lot of these issues going on over there because the poverty on the Oregon coast is incredible.
It's pretty awful. I'd like to debate Michael sometime. He's a piece of work.
I like him, though. I always appreciate that he calls.
Anyway,
but go ahead.
Here's what, just one example he made. If you try to do a short sale, it sounds like an easy way out. But what they don't tell you, and it was a realtor that stopped me from doing this, a friend said, and I'm sure your guest will confirm this, if you take a short sale, the feds will go after you for taxes.
Absolutely.
As it's a gain.
And
a lot of people won't tell you that. And another thing, and, you know, I don't live in Portland, and so I can't, and, you know, but as Lisa said, it's epidemic, and we've helped two or three people just from our own experience to stay in their house. Not that we are saints or anything, but we're as pure as the driven slush.
Mm-hmm.
But
all right,
we had what happened to us is we went to HUD. There's an excellent resource in the one we went to in Hillsborough called Open Door, and they have experts. Not very well paid ones either that know the questions to ask, but you have to have the foreclosure notice served on you first.
It's hard, Brian.
That will put a lot of people under stress, right?
Incredible
there. So
stress.
The message is: don't do it alone. And there are, and we've sent several people there since. But one other thing,
Brian, we're running out of show. We've got 1 minute left. I really appreciate him calling. And by the way, on the subject of what Brian said, if you're in foreclosure and somebody's offering you services for money, like they're expecting you to pay them, that's against the law. Don't do it. So really quickly, sorry to have to cut you off, Brian, but we want to give Ajamu Umi a chance to list the three specific things that he's soliciting people's help for. So this Saturday,
10:30 a.m. at 4022 Northeast 14th Avenue. That's Ms. Steele's house. You can't miss it. The banners are out front. We're meeting to canvas and talk to our neighbors. 4022 Northeast 14th Avenue, Saturday at 10:30 a.m. And then Friday night, Blazing Arrow Weekly Patrols, Lombard and Interstate, 8 p.m. And then first Saturday of each month, 238 Northeast Mason, the Black Working Group meetings.
All right, that's it for our show. Thanks to our guest, Ajamu Umi. Find out more at weareoregon.org. There's a Facebook page, and you can reach him at umifam@gmail.com. Special thanks to engineer Steve Nasser and Sky the Studio Dog. This show will be podcast on kboo.fm by the end of today. Grab that link and share it with your friends and family. I'm Lisa Loving. Follow me on Twitter for more news and information about the topics we discuss on this show. Theme music by the March 4th Marching Band. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned for Political Perspectives.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River and the Gorge, 100.7 FM Corvallis and Albany. The time is 9 o'clock, straight up. Coming up next, your host, Per Fogering, speaks with economist and author Joel Magnuson about his new book, The Approaching Great Transformation, Toward a Livable Post-Carbon Economy, which is about how we think and act in the world economically as the era of cheap oil comes to an end. At 10 o'clock, Chris Andre hosts Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary. At 10:15, hear Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. And at 11 on the Dirtbag, host Glenn Andreessen welcomes back the Home Orchard Society president, Joni Cooper, to talk about the March 17th Fruit Propagation Fair at the Clackamas County Fairgrounds in Canby. Thank you, KBOO members, for your generous support of your community radio station. If you are not a KBOO member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today.
KBOO Community Radio turns 45 this year, and our first 2013 membership drive starts on the 21st. Help make reaching our $99,000 fundraising goal a little easier by offering a matching donation of at least $500 for us to use on air during the drive. Matches are really great motivators to entice our non-contributing listeners to donate, so please email membership@kboo.org if you would like to offer a match or have any questions. Or call 503-231-8032 and ask for the membership department to plan your spring drive matching gift today.
Don't let
Hugo Chavez, president of Venezuela, died last week, and hundreds of thousands of people poured into the streets to mourn him. Arguably the most influential leader in Latin America for over a decade, what will his legacy be? Join me, Linda Olson Osterlund, for a deeper look this Thursday morning at 9:30 a.m. My guest is Miguel Tinker Salas, professor of Latin American Studies at Pomona College and author of The Enduring Legacy, Oil, Culture, and Citizenship in Venezuela. That's this Thursday morning at 9:30 a.m.
This song speaks of the Festival Express, a train and series of concerts traveling across Canada in the summer of 1970 featuring the Grateful Dead, Janis Joplin, Delaney and Bonnie, and many more artists. Come see the film Festival Express Thursday, March 14th at the Clinton Street Theater at this month's KABU Radio Pictures screening. All ticket sales benefit KABU Radio and may be purchased now via our website, kboo.fm. Plus, we'll have another short film and a trivia contest for you to match wits with the hosts of KABU's Grateful Dead and Friends program. That's Festival Express, Thursday the 14th at the Clinton Street Theater. Details and tickets available now at kboo.fm.
Good morning. This is Per Fogring, and the show is Political Perspectives. And my guest is Joel Magnuson, who is a professor of economics here in Portland. And he's written a book called Approaching Great Transformation Toward a Livable Post-Carbon Economy. Joel Magnuson, welcome to KABU.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Well, let's jump right into it. You start out with the twilight of the oil age, which is sort of only about 100 years old or so.
That's right.
So what was the oil age? You talk about internal combustion engines and...
it's essentially the